Golf Smarter number 229 for May 4, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Banana putting. Yeah, banana putting with Paul Hobart.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Ahoy at GolfAhoyWest.com. The Ryder Cup is one of the most entertaining golf competitions in the world and only happens every other year. It's one thing to be there, it's another to have your hotel room right off the coast of the event. Make your plans now to be at Celtic Manor in Wales this fall for this once-in-a-lifetime experience when you book through GolfAhoyWest.com. I was having a conversation the other day with someone about why I love doing the Golf Smarter podcast and continue to do it. And two things came immediately to mind. First is you. That ranks first mostly because of what a bonus it has become in the process. Since I started doing these interviews back in 2005, I never had any concept that I would have the opportunity to communicate with golfers all over the world about their game, their issues, and mostly their love of this kind of information. So thank you for your continued support. It doesn't go unnoticed and is truly appreciated. Secondly, is getting these free consultations. As someone who runs a small business, I know that consultants want to share their knowledge, but also want to be compensated for their efforts. I'm not suggesting that you buy into everything our guests have to say, but I want you to know that I really do appreciate when you support our featured guests through me or directly to them. I bring that up because I feel badly that I only mentioned on our members-only episode last week that if you'd like to have Dave Austed of Austeds.com answer any of your questions on balls or equipment, please click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarter.com and I'll be happy to forward your thoughts along and get you an answer. Getting questions about gear or mechanics is one thing, but here's an amazing example of the trust that's been built inside our community of Golf Smarter listeners. I got an email from a listener that was directed to Dr. Joe Parent of Zen Golf, and it's so outrageous I needed to share it with you. Dr. Parent, I have a unique question for you. I have a conditioned aversion to buttons, as in buttons on clothing. This aversion manifests itself similarly to hanging around a person that smells bad. If I'm eating and the people I'm eating with have buttons on, I tend to lose my appetite. If I'm already in a bad mood, the presence of buttons irritates me even more. As you can imagine, this can be a problem when playing golf. I'm wondering if you have any advice in either curing myself of this aversion or lessening its effects, dealing with it mentally on or off the golf course. I know this question's a little strange, but thanks for any help you may be able to give. And here's the response that Dr. Joe wrote. You're not alone. This aversion is actually a recognized condition called coumpaounophobia. That is estimated to affect approximately 1 in 75,000 people. Because it's a conditioned response, i.e. habit, you can be trained out of this condition. You should seek a psychologist or counselor with training in behavior modification techniques and ask them to take you through a process called systematic desensitization. As the name indicates, this process will systematically, gradually desensitize your reactivity to buttons. Whoa. Okay, I apologize for not being aware of this and thinking that he was actually kidding when he wrote this note. But wow, do you ever thought you'd learn about a new phobia on a golf podcast? Yoo-hoo! Okay, now how's this one? Picture a banana in your hand. Or better yet, if you eat a banana while you play, take it out of your bag and rotate the banana around. Hold it up. Rotate the banana around. Now, lay it on the putting green. Don't step on it. Now, increase the proportions of that banana so it magically stretches on the green between your ball and the hole. Fred, where are you going with this? Glad you asked, because over the next two episodes, Paul Hobart will be happy to explain how you can increase your putting success with the image of a banana. Yes, his method is so compelling that we actually spend 30 minutes today and close to an hour discussing the subtle nuances on next week's show. Whew. Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Paul.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks so much for coming to the show today.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad to be speaking with you because I need help. Usually I'm like looking for people to share lots of information for everybody. I need help. I've lost my touch on putting. I'm coming up 4, 8, 10 feet short all the time. I'm just like, I used to have this nice, easy touch. Maybe I'm thinking too much. I don't know what's going on, but my putting touch is gone. Can you help?
Well, you know, I'd love to help you out with that. I would love to help you out. You're probably not the only guy that is in that same boat. So I think...
And we're sinking fast.
Actually, no, I think putting, I think people kind of overcomplicate it. And, you know, I've tried to come up with some concepts to sort of simplify things and also get people's noggin in the right place right before the putter starts back so that you can avoid having those 4-foot and 8-foot mistakes that you were talking about.
And, you know, you say simplify things. I once heard Fred Funk say, just putt like a kid.
It's like, yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, you can, you know, you give a little kid a putter and a golf ball and tell them to figure out how to get the ball into a cup on the putting green. They do a pretty darn good job with it. And then we get, you know, as adults, we have to try to figure out how to do that and then how to improve the part that we found out how to do. And we get distracted, and we lose sight of the fact that we're just trying to make the ball go into the cup. You know, ultimately, it doesn't really matter how you do that or how you look doing it. Just get the result that you're after.
And how do we get there?
Well, I think
I know you have a book, and it explains everything. But I'm going for
sure.
Right now.
I think what people need to do is they need to forget about technique, and they need to forget about having a perfect putter and a perfect putting stroke and all those things. There's tons of people in the world that have all that stuff and they're lousy putters still. I mean, I watch guys and ladies on TV that we see every week that have access to the best resources and they still miss putts, you know, so you have to figure out how can that be? They've got all the stuff that you're supposed to have and they work with people and they do all the practicing that we're all supposed to do. So I think what you need to do is you just need to have a better idea when you get up over the putter as you approach it. What am I really trying to do here? And then try to create a game plan of, you know, how's my ball going to get from here to in the hole? And then everything that happens after that needs to match up with that. So I'm a big advocate of, you know, let's figure out how the ball's going to go in, and then let's kind of paint a picture of that, and then let's set up and let's go ahead and roll the ball on that line and stick with that. Let's not change our mind and come up with some, you know, crazy idea standing over the ball that we need to change this or change that or swing the putter a certain way. Let's just, you know, let's figure out how to get from point A to point B and then set up and go ahead and do that.
There have been many times where I'm standing behind the ball and I'm lining up my putt and I'm checking the line and I can see what I need to do speed wise. And then I'll stand over the ball and everything looks completely different.
No doubt. Well, some of the guys that I've learned a lot of putting stuff from, like Craig Farnsworth, Jeff Mangum, you know, a few of the the really well-renowned putting instructors, and probably Dr. Craig, I would say, gave me the best idea. He said, you know, your eyeballs tend to work best the way they're placed on your head, which, you know, as we're sitting here chatting, our eyeballs are level. You know, the two eyes are level, and that's where most of us kind of figure out our putt, with our eyes level. And then you go turn your head, you know, you bend over, you turn your head, you rotate everything, and it's just not going to look the same. So I try to have people, you know, let's figure out what's going on with our eyes level, whether that's, you know, behind the ball, behind the cup, off to the side. You know, use your eyeballs the way that they're placed on your head, figure out what's going on, and then understand that once you get up over the putt and you turn your head, that it's going to look funny. But if you know that, you know, and you know that little guy on your shoulder is going to whisper in your ear and say, hey, Fred, you know, it breaks more than that, or turn, you know, you got to hit it harder, you got to do this or that. If you can get to where you can ignore that guy, you know, he'll start to talk a little bit more quietly the next time, and then you can go ahead and just trust what you planned out and what you discovered with your eyes working the right way.
Even the little guy on my shoulder says, hey, Fred. Oh my gosh, everybody's saying,
I think we've all got that little guy.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, I mean, the idea of your eyes are level, not only the level, your eyes are facing forward, right?
Exactly.
As opposed to, say, we were a bird and we were standing over the ball, then we can see the hole by look. We wouldn't see the ball looking down, but we would see the hole. It is committing to your shot. Even
no question.
Whether it's your putt or your drive or your approach shot, it is committing to it from behind the ball before you step up to it, huh?
Right. I think you know, because that's where you're going to get the best information. And if you have a perspective that you can, you know, from which you can look at the putt and you can get good information, and you know that there's another spot where you're giving yourself bad information. You know, I always ask people, now, why would you listen to that guy if you know he's wrong most of the time? Mm. You know, most of us, if you own a business or, you know, you have an advisor or somebody that gives you advice, if they give you bad advice all the time, at some point you fire that guy or you get him out of your world because you don't want to listen to that anymore. But in golf, we just keep listening to that guy tell us as we stand over the ball that things aren't correct. And we change things, and that's what I try to get people out of, is don't change things standing over the ball. That's the worst possible place to do that. You know, if you don't believe what you're doing, take a step back, start over, check things out, you know, confirm if, you know, am I doing the right thing or not. If you're doing the wrong thing and you feel that I need to make an adjustment, do that. But you need to get over that ball, and you need to have a sense of certainty about what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to have 25 different putting strokes going on, and you're going to get the results that match up with that.
As many things in golf that are difficult, I find that the hardest thing to do is step away.
No doubt. Well, there's, you know, you don't want to hold up the people behind you, and you don't want the people that you're playing with to think that you think you're better than they are or something because you've got the nerve to back off the shot. But you know what I always tell people with backing off the shot is, you know, if you stand over it and you hit a bad shot, it's going to probably take more time in the long run than if you would have backed off and hit a good shot.
You're absolutely right. Oh, my gosh, that's so true. But, you know, if you have to, say you hit your shot and it goes OB, now you need to hit a provisional. You have to announce that you're hitting provisional, right?
Exactly.
So what I like to do is announce what I call a mental mulligan.
That's a great idea.
And it doesn't count on the scorecard. Right?
No.
And
no,
nobody's going to say you broke the rules with a mental mulligan, so just step away and go, mental mulligan, announce it to everybody. They'll get a good laugh out of it, and then you won't feel like you're being pressuring yourself of taking too much time or everyone being annoyed with you that you take too much time.
You know, you'd probably start a great trend within your foursome, too, where everybody would do that, and you'd all play better, and nobody's golf ego would have to worry about what the other people were thinking either.
Right. And then on the next round, everyone's going, okay, two mental mulligans per side, please. Oh, gosh. All right. So let's talk about your method of teaching of putting and the title of your book being Banana Putting. Here we are. We're 10 minutes into this conversation, and we're now bringing up banana putting. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, you know, I did that because I really wanted to get people's attention and have me ask ask that exact same question.
Got me. You know, well, congratulations, you succeeded.
Awesome. Well, you know, if I just called it, you know, putt better, how to make more putts, I mean, it kind of sounds like the same old thing. So I really did want to get people's attention, but there is a reason that I used the banana term, because I found as I was giving people lessons, I was using the word banana to describe a concept that I think is important when people are planning their putts out. So if you can, you know, the people that are listening, if you can imagine the shape of a banana, it's got the little seams on it or the little lines that kind of come down the side. If you can imagine laying that on the ground as we're looking at a putt, and this is not all my information. I mean, it's, you know, you can, as soon as a golf ball was rolling on the ground, this was evident to people. But when you have a putt, if you have a breaking putt, there's going to be a line that you can hit the ball on where you hit it as hard as you can, and it'll hit the back of the cup, and it won't jump out. It'll stay in the cup. You know, so that's our most direct line to the cup. There's also a line where you can hit the ball playing a lot more break, and it's, you know, it's going much more slowly, and maybe the ball's just going to topple in right at the last second. So there's a line where we can hit it the hardest, and there's a line there we can hit it the softest, and both of those would end up in the cup. You know, so I've done some testing with that and, you know, plotted it out and drawn little banana pictures with golf balls and everything. But essentially, the shape that it takes is the shape of a banana, because you've got two arcs. One's a lot straighter than the other one, you know, and one kind of loops out to the side more. So as I kept describing this to people, I'd say, well, it's kind of the shape of a banana. It's kind of the shape of a banana. So when I went to put my thoughts down, I said, well, I need something catchy so guys like Fred will ask me what the heck it means. So I just went ahead and called it banana putting. And if, you know, for anybody that's seen the logo, the guy that drew the logo up, I said, I want the logo to have a banana on it, but I want it to also kind of indicate what the heck the concept is without, you know, maybe blaring it outright to somebody initially. So that's kind of where it came from.
Well, and do you think that your do you think your artist succeeded?
I think he did a nice job. Yeah,
I think it's an excellent visual of what you're talking about. I think it says it immediately. I think they did. He nailed it.
Yeah, I think once people hear the concept, and then you know, if you look at the logo after you've heard just a little bit of the concept, you go, "Oh yeah, okay, I could see my ball going on this line or this line or this line." And there's the gist of it is there's a lot of different ways to make the same putt.
Well, and so now you're not making it simpler, buddy.
Wait.
All of a sudden, now I have three options, and all I want to do is get it from A to B, and you're giving me three different options.
Awesome. What I tell people with the banana, so on the banana, you know, on the logo, there's three lines. Like you said, there's the lowest line, the highest line, and in between. Now, what I tell people is based on your skill level or how involved or uninvolved you want to be in this process. You can decide, you know, how many options you have on a putt. So maybe you just look at it and say, well, if I hit it really hard, I'm going to hit it on this line. If I hit it really easy, I'm going to hit it on this line. Now, you being the great golfer that you are, Fred, clearing of the throat, you may decide, well, hey, I can hit it hard, I could hit it easy, and I could hit it in between. You know, I can have kind of a medium putt. Yeah, and somebody that's maybe played more, maybe they're a more accomplished golfer, they might say, okay, I got, you know, five different ways I can play this. What I usually recommend to people is, you know, figure out what your profile is. Are you more the guy that wants to charge the putt and ram it in the back of the cup? Or would you prefer to, you know, to die it in there and just try to do that most of the time? You know, don't try to, you know, you get in a scramble sometimes or a partner situation, you know, and your buddy says, well, ram it in there, you know, and if it's an uncomfortable speed for you, typically you're not going to do very well. You know, so I recommend, you know, within that scope or within that banana shaped area, let's figure out where, you know, most of the time, where's the best speed profile for you to kind of putt the ball into the cup. I don't know if that's simplified it at all or not.
Well,
but
I'm not
trying to complicate it, but just give people options.
No, I'm liking the concept, but here's my issue is that, and this is probably why I'm coming up short more times than not lately, because I don't want to go long. And I wanted to just kind of like, you know, flow, just drop right into the cup when it gets there.
Perfect.
Right? And it would be nice if I can get it into the middle of the cup as opposed to hitting the back of the cup. But I'm afraid if I'm hitting the back of the cup, I guess what I'm saying is the skill level that I'm at, I don't believe the ball's going to go in the hole until I get really close. So
right,
I'm not
right.
standing at 15, 5, or let's say, I'm not standing at 10, 15, 25 and beyond feet away from the putt thinking, all right, I'm putting this one in. Where I know on the tour, they don't think about missing ever.
Right, right.
But
it's, you know, I think,
golfers.
And I tell people the ball's got to stop someplace, so it might as well be in the hole. I know that's not always the case. And
yeah,
I think
from your mouth to the golf god's ears, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's, yeah, I mean, for most putts, there is some way that you could get the ball to go in the hole. I mean, there's very few putts that are impossible. There's certainly lots of difficult putts, but there's usually some way you could get the ball to go in. Now, I think from a speed standpoint, and that's how I would, you know, steer somebody towards what pace they should usually use, is most people probably want to be higher up on the curve, so playing more break, because the resulting putt, if you miss, is going to be a lot shorter. Yeah, so I think there's very few occasions where you're going to want to hit the ball as hard as you can into the back of the cup, because depending on the greens that you're playing, you may have a longer putt on the next one. You know, so I think for most people, that's very seldom a good idea. I just want them to know that that's a that that's an option. And a concept that I try to tell people, and I think a lot of people do this backwards, is they draw – people draw a straight line from them to the cup, and then they try to figure the breakout moving away from that straight line. What I tell people to do is let's try to figure out what's the most break I could possibly play on this putt, and then I'll kind of work down from that. So I think
I'm
that
with
gets
you. I'm with
to,
you. Keep going.
It gets people, you know, because usually, you know, if you play in a tournament or you know a scramble, like we said earlier, when you have people read putts, it's always a ball outside the cup, a cup, you know, two cups out. Everything's relative to where the hole is, and I think in a lot of putts, if you play someplace with very undulating greens, you got to get to where you can aim the ball away from the hole and give that thing a lot more opportunity either to go in. Or at the very least, at, you know, at the end of the putt, to be moving towards the hole instead of away from the hole. You know, so I have people kind of read things backwards, like how high could we play this and still make it? And then if you want to add a little bit more speed to it, then we'll take some of that break off of it. But let's not putt everything at the edge of the cup, because there's an awful lot of putts that break more than that.
But isn't this counterintuitive that the slower you're going to put, the slower pace that you're going to put on the ball, the bigger the arc it's going to take?
It is, yes.
Because
yeah, no
you
question.
Think that if you're hitting it slower, it's not going to get around that big arc.
Right, right. It takes a little bit of practicing. I mean, I would you know urge people to go find a spot on a practice green or a green on the golf course that's got a lot of break to it, and just experiment a little bit. You know, stick a tee in it, say here's you know I think I need to aim at this spot and stick a tee in the ground, see how that goes, and get to where you're. You know, you're playing enough break. You're getting that thing high enough up the slope where it has an opportunity to go in, and it just you know changes your mindset a little bit. You know, because it's hard to aim away from where you want the ball to go. Our minds like to play connect the dots.
Sure.
So we're always trying to just go straight from you know from here to the cup, and that's how a lot of people putt anyway. They just aim right at the hole.
Right, right. And to me, again, we get back to if you go a straighter line, you've got to putt it faster. And what generally will happen in for me is that I'll miss on the low side, and it'll just scoot right by the hole and go
right.
eight feet away.
Right.
Right.
Yep. And that's, you know, that's the problem. And is, you know, the adjustments that I mentioned earlier is, you know, once people get lined up and they've made a decision, okay, this is how I see myself making this putt. If you get over it and you change your mind about the speed, you know, you say, hey, I'm, you know, I got this Fred guy one down and I'm going to really show him what's going on here. So I'm going to ram this thing in. But unfortunately you lined up to play a bunch of break. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And if you get over it and you say, well, I'm going to play it, you know, right on the right edge. I'm going to really firm it in there. And then at the last second, you chicken out and you hit it a lot easier. That's not going to work either. So I try to get people to, you know, decide where you're, what line you think you need to putt the ball on and at what speed. And that's, you know, I usually tell people, figure out the speed first. You know, is this, what speed's it going to go in? And then that dictates your line. But once you get over it, you got to stick with that speed. If you change your mind about something, it's going to be a disaster. You're just not going to hit a good putt, and you're going to miss it nearly every time.
Right, right. No, I mean, I think that consistently what we hear on this program from instructors all the time is stick with what your decision is.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah, everyone.
Unless I change my mind.
All right. So how does? All right. So now we've got the concept of different speeds are going to give you different angles.
Right.
Okay, where do we go with that idea?
How okay, do we make that work? I have, because there's five key points in the book, and I made these up because they all kind of rhyme, and I liked them. So what I tell people to do is I say scan it, plan it, point it, roll it, and then rate it. Some of those rhyme, I guess. So there's five
everything rhymes with it.
Yeah, it does.
When you keep repeating the word it, it's going to rhyme, buddy.
I think I'll move into poetry next, maybe.
Yeah, right.
So scan it to me is gathering all the information that's going to tell me, you know, what's the green doing, what's the break of the putt, and so forth. Just
and
to
when
summarize.
Do you start to scan it? I mean, when you're saying gathering all the information, at what
sure.
point? When you grab your putter out of your bag or as you're...
I'd say before that. I'd say as soon as you can see the green... you can start gathering information. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look and see what the lay of the land is. I like to tell people it's kind of like a, you know, when you have a camera that zooms in and zooms out. I think the way a lot of people read their putt is they've zoomed in, and the only thing that they're looking at is the grass between the golf ball and the cup. Mm-hmm. So I like to have people zoom out, you know, start looking, you know, look at the green from the fairway. You know, a lot of times you could say, well, okay, from here, the left side of the green is quite obviously higher than the right side. Let me just, you know, put that into the memory bank here for when I go to read my putt. You know, pick out the high point, the low point, just generally speaking, see what the land is doing around the green. And you file that away. A lot of this sounds like it's sort of a complicated process to gather information, but once you kind of tell your brain to do that every time, what you'll find is you just sort of soak it in. It's more like a sponge, you know, and that's what good putters do, is they gather all the relevant information and they just kind of figure it out. You know, they're not going through a checklist of, you know, where's the high spot, where's the low spot, you know, is there grain going this way, is there, you know, what's going on. They just factor all those things in as they're approaching the green, as they're approaching their putt. So that's the scan it, basically, is my, you know, I don't like the term reading the green, because I think you have to factor in more stuff than just what's going on in your little portion of the green right there.
Okay.
I and, you know, some of that comes down to watching what your fellow golfers are doing too, because you're all playing to the same cup.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm taking the putter out of the bag and I glance over and I watch your chip shot roll up there, somebody's sand shot or whatever the case may be, if I watch just at the end of the roll of the golf ball, it's always going to fall downhill. So that's going to give me some pretty good data. You know, not that I have to intently watch that, but I'm just going to pay attention to it and go, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, that ball, you know, trickled down to the right a little bit as it went up to the cup. So I'm going to plug that into my memory bank too. So when I go to figure out my, you know, what mine's going to do and kind of figure out what's going on in the world of my putt, then I've got some good information in there that I can tap into.
So what can I learn? Let's say that my playing partner, he went a little bit long and he came up about 25 feet from the pin, and I came up a little short, but I'm about 15 feet from the pin. So now we're both looking at the ball from opposite ends. Like, he's at 12 o'clock, I'm at 6 o'clock, okay?
Okay.
And he's got to go first. What can I learn from his putt? Because he's going first.
Well, one thing is you're gonna, you know, even though you're putting to the same hole, there could be different things going on with your buddy's putt versus your putt. So I think you have to look and see if there's a fairly consistent slope that you guys are both putting on.
Let's assume that there is a consistent slope.
Okay.
So
well,
if he's
going
to go, now I'm watching his ball, and for me it's going left to right. Towards
okay.
the hole, right? So if he's
right.
a right-handed putter, it's going to go outside and back in. Does that mean I should continue with that line? It's going to go it's going to break for me that same direction, or it's going to go the opposite direction because I'm on the other side of the green?
Well, the ball certainly should break the same direction. I mean, it's going to be, you know, your putt would be right to left if his is left to right. You're going uphill, so yours is going to break probably a little bit less than his is coming downhill. So you can factor that in. So, you know, I look at, and I would recommend to people, you know, when you watch somebody putt, you know, and as they hit the putt, you know, kind of watch the stroke. You know, how much back and forth did the guy swing the putter? Did it look like he didn't hit the ball, he hit the ball too hard? And then look and see what the ball does. You know, if it rolls, you know, if he knocks it all the way down to where your golf ball is, you could say, well, I think this green might be, you know, have some speed to it. Now, if it looked like he just made a lousy putting stroke, then I would throw that out. You know, so you have to kind of factor in, you know, is the information I'm getting from this guy credible? Because he might just be really bad. But if it's a good player or somebody that you think's a decent putter and that, you know, they hit a putt, you know, I like to listen too to what people say, because sometimes a guy goes, you know, gosh, I can't believe it was that quick, or I can't believe it broke that much, or, you know, so you can get some feedback from that too. But I would watch predominantly what's going on as the ball comes to a stop, because you're just going to get a little bit of information. You know, did it continue to roll out? That tells me some things about green speed. And, you know, which way did that ball kind of topple over at the end? Because that really is going to tell me what the slope is doing.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, you know, it's part of the traditional elements of the game that I still have I'm having trouble with. which is honors. Okay, so now a guy's farther from the hole, so he putts first. Well, then how come on the next tee, if he had the highest amount of shots for that hole, he doesn't go first?
Right.
if I had the lowest score, I should get the choice of who goes first. I want to see what they're going to do, just like I'm doing on a putt. I want to see how they approach the hole. They approach their tee shot. That's okay.
I like that.
You know, I just
could be part of the new golf. You know,
what's that?
Yeah, golf, right. Golf in Fred's world.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Not the USGA. Okay, so go. I'm sorry to interrupt with my ADD brain, but here we go. Next after Scanit is Planet.
Scanit is Planet. That's really got a lot to do with kind of the banana concept. So that would, you know, Planet is really going to be, you know, where you've factored in your information. You look at the putt and you go, okay, this is how I see myself getting the ball to go in the hole. You know, this is where within that banana shape I think I'm going to putt the ball, and this is how it's going to go in. You know, that's kind of the point where you're going to decide the speed that you'd like to hit it, and then the line that's dictated by that.
And commit to it.
And commit to it, exactly.
Okay. All right. After Planet, Point It.
Point It. Point It is going to be next. So that's – I'm an advocate of lining, you know, something on the golf ball, lining that up in the direction you want to start your putt. You know, so a lot of the golf balls nowadays, they've figured out that people do that, so they've actually put the little you know, the little writing on the side of the ball, whether it says Callaway or Titleist, Pro V or whatever. You know, they've put little arrows on both sides. I'm sorry?
Dixon Earth. That's the ball that I like to use, but you probably never even heard of it. Go ahead.
I have not. So you know, so whether it's using something that's already on the ball or whether you like to draw a line on the ball, mm-hmm. I like for people to, you know, and having looked at the putt and planned it out and say, okay, well, I think I need to start it on this line for it to kind of trace the line that I've envisioned it going on, and, you know, set the ball down very carefully and point that line where you think you need to start it. Okay. Cause that's going to be a key component of being able to get over the ball and really trust what you're doing. Is you got to have some basis to know, okay, I'm lined up the right way. You know, I've got to have some reference point, that tells me I'm set up in a way where I can make this putt.
Should you also use that line to help? And then the putters have lines. You know, they'll give you a tee. A lot of the putters now, they'll make
sure.
A white line or something, so you can follow that line. But should you also use that to line up your feet with that, or is that not as important?
I think you could. I think there's so much personal preference in putting. You know, there's open stances, there's closed stances. I think the key is most good putters, when they set up to it, will have their shoulders pretty square to the ball. So I think, you know, if you had a square stance, by all means, you could help yourself out probably by aligning yourself up, you know, with your feet parallel to where the golf ball's pointed. But it just kind of depends on how each person sets up to it.
I just had an epiphany. Is it more important to square your shoulders than your feet?
Yes.
Oh. Wow, I think I just discovered something.
Ah,
okay.
We got something out of our conversation now. That's good.
With a minute and a half to go. So then, all right, Point It, Roll It.
Okay, now Roll It is going to be where you're going to get over the top of it. You get your ball lined up. You got the putter set down behind the ball. So everything's good. This is where we're going to trust the fact that we've done our homework. We've come up with a game plan on how the ball's going to get to the hole and go in, and we're going to set up to it, and we're just going to be 100% committed to rolling the ball on that line that we chose. Okay? The other thing that we need to do is our last thought, and this is what I tell people, the last thing you should be thinking, because once you set up to it and you got the putter down there and the ball down there and the lines and all that stuff, is you are aligned at that point. You know, your alignment should be over at that point. So we want to kind of check out of that department and say, all right, let me put 100% focus on creating the correct amount of backswing and through swing that's going to hit the ball the distance that I chose earlier when I was planning my putt out.
Hmm. Now, you don't refer to it as hitting it. You call it roll it.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I think a lot
of that. Is that a conscious choice?
Yeah, it's. You know, I think the words a lot of times that we put in our head dictate the movements that we make or the way that we swing a golf club.
Okay.
So it's been my experience, if you can tell somebody to roll the ball towards the cup, their mechanics tend to be better. You know, even though I typically don't work on mechanics a whole lot with people, you know, because I don't think putting's that complicated. I mean, I have, you know, 2-year-old daughter, and she can putt the ball beautifully. You know, she can roll a ball on the ground as good as anybody.
Wow.
Making it go in the hole is another story.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay, now I got
you. The act of putting a golf ball is not that complicated. I mean, you just, if you make contact, it's going to roll on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if people can think about rolling the ball towards the cup or rolling the ball along the target line, it tends to inspire more of the kind of swing of the golf club that would cause that to happen. Whereas if you tell people to hit the putt, in many cases, that trailing hand, you know, that right hand for a righty is going to jump in there and give that thing a little pop down at the bottom. And then you get really inconsistent contact. The club face is going right and left. And, you know, a whole host of bad things happen usually when you're hitting your putts.
Okay. Now, listen, before we get to the last one, and I apologize to the listeners for this, we've reached our time on this. Would you mind sticking around? Because I have so many more questions for you. Can we do another episode for the following week?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So we just want to tell everybody, again, it's bananaputting.com. I don't think we have to tell you how to spell banana putting. There's an ebook there with some gifts that go along with your ebook. And the book is also now in hardback, right, on Amazon?
Paperback.
On paperback. Okay, good.
Yes, sir.
And so you can check out Amazon. We'll have that on a Golfer Smart in our book section at the Golfer Smart. And Paul Hobart will return next week for a members-only episode because we've got a lot more questions to ask. Paul, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Again, Paul will join us next week to review the first 4 points in more detail and finish the concept. We will get to point five. We also talked about selecting a putter, belly putters, getting fitted for a putter, center versus heel shafted putters, and a lot more, all in about 50 minutes. And if you're a Golf Smarter member, then be prepared for that 50-minute conversation. But if you're not, then go to golfsmarter.com and join Golf Smarter for members only today. Not only will you get to hear part two of this conversation with Paul, but your world will explode with golf content from the last 4+ years of Golf Smarter podcasts. If you check us out in iTunes, you'll see that we only list about the last 12 episodes for you to listen to, but our members have complete access to our full archives. Also, new members who sign up in the United States are eligible for a free box of Dixon Earth balls with the Golf Smarter logo, the only and first, I guess if it's the first, it is the only, eco-friendly tournament-quality golf ball that we talked about last week, and the ball that I choose to play. If that's any endorsement at all, that's the golf ball I play because it is an eco-friendly golf ball, and I love the way it plays. If you aren't able to join Golf Smarter for members only right now, but you are interested in some of our past conversations that can help your game today, we do have episodes featuring all of our mental coaches for only 99 cents each. People like Fred Shoemaker, Dr. Joe Parent, Dr. Robert K. Winters, and a whole lot more. All available today at the Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. And another one of the great benefits of being a member is prizes. Congratulations, Trevor Torres of Clarkston, Michigan. He's receiving a copy of The Right Sticks, Equipment Myths That Could Wreck Your Golf Game by clubmaker extraordinaire and frequent guest to Golf Smarter, Tom Wishon. Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Ahoy at golfahoywest.com. Golf Smarter listeners have an exclusive opportunity to attend the Ryder Cup this year at Celtic Manor in Wales as Team USA battles the Europeans in team competition that rivals all other golf team matches. Contact Frank Rogers to get all the information about your luxurious accommodations aboard the Le Diamant, transportation and tickets to each day's events, and the possibility, I love this part, of flying with Team USA aboard their privately chartered 767 from the U.S. to Wales. This is a once-in-a-lifetime package. Listen, do you have a birthday coming up in the next 12 months? Don't lie to me. I know you do. Isn't it about time you were honest with what you really want? Tell them that you want to go to Europe to see the Ryder Cup in person and let them know that you'll take care of all the arrangements yourself. What they won't know is that it's all done for you already. Click on email golfahoy at the top of golfsmarter.com and start your conversation with Frank Rogers at golfahoywest.com today. We close with another reason why golf is the greatest, as submitted by our listeners. And since we're talking about putting today, let's just say that it's standing over a five-footer that doesn't matter to anyone but you and being thankful for the feeling. Next week for Members Only, Part 2 with Paul Hobart on banana putting. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or reasons why you love golf, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.